As a child, I had the same vision again and again. Now I understand its meaning and where it must lead.
Spock.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, incubating dilithium.
Oh, wow. Well, we are here this week to talk about the very first short Trek ever, Runaway.
I think... This is one that could be polarizing for some fans. I think there's a lot of people excited to see our first glimpse of Star Trek Discovery ever since, I guess, Giorgio was recruited by Section 31.
Right, apparently.
But I think there's also a lot of big Tilly fans out there. You and I are both included in that. And
definitely.
Some great character moments with Tilly. But I wonder if you and I are a little hesitant over having just pure adulation over something like this. Just because of the story, maybe, that we were following here. But why don't we be constructive in our criticism, Cam? But,
criticism? I don't know what you're talking about.
nothing but cheers from your perspective here. But I think it's...
Inner light, you're no longer the best Star Trek story ever.
And you did it in a quarter of the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why don't we get into it? We're following a story of, you know, kind of like a stowaway aboard Star Trek Discovery, as well as Tilly dealing with her own mommy issues. So I think, Cam, if we do another mommy's issue episode like we did for, was it Mother's Day 2017?
Yeah, it was called Mother's Gone Amok.
Yeah.
I'll post a link to it in the show notes this week.
We can discuss Tilly's own issues, which have been alluded to before.
Yes.
So this one... Let's start with what we liked about this.
Yes.
And look, any excuse to have more Tilly, I enjoy. I think Mary Wiseman always hits out of the ballpark with somebody that I think a lot of people can relate to. And
right.
Just somebody who's still finding her groove, even though she is now officially like a commissioned officer in Starfleet, not just a cadet. And she finds somebody that she can really relate to, that kind of engineering person in Poe, the stowaway here.
Yes.
And it is interesting to see kind of these parallel stories going back and forth between the two of them. And they're both characters that have very similar, I guess, conflicts going on with what their place is exactly moving forward in their own respective societies or cultures. And I guess I'm referring to Starfleet as, you know, Tilly's own culture,
right?
So
yeah,
to
yeah.
speak. But Cam, what did you like about this one?
I think Mary Wiseman is an absolute blast.
Yeah.
Well, I love what she brings to the show. She feels very unpolished as a character. And not just because she's a cadet or an ensign. It's because there's something about her that feels less poised and kind of that ideal that all Starfleet members seem to have.
Yeah.
Especially when you get into the 24th century characters like your Rikers and onwards into the Voyager and all that sort of stuff. There's something about Tilly that feels new as a character. In Star Trek.
Does she kind of remind you of maybe Cito Jaxa?
Do you want me to pronounce it a different way each time I say the name again?
Actually, yeah, repeat the name, Cam.
Cito Jaxa.
There you go. I think you got it right for the first time ever. But I think...
Yes, you know, but also, I don't know, like, not in the way the character is portrayed on screen. Like, Tilly, to me, feels like a very raw character. The way just they choose to write her and direct her and how Mary Wiseman plays her.
Well, what do you mean by raw? Like, there's still some molding she needs to go through to be a fully realized, you know, Starfleet officer?
I'm not even talking about within the context of the show's journey. I mean in terms of how she is portrayed as a human character on screen.
Yeah.
Like, there is a, like, kind of almost, like, stripped-down authenticity to the way she is portrayed. It's interesting that this episode was co-written by Jenny Lumet, who actually wrote the movie Rachel Getting Married.
Oh, okay.
Back in 2008, which I loved, with Anne Hathaway.
You really liked that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I recall I didn't so much like it
right.
myself.
But she seems like a great conduit for Mary Wiseman because, I mean, you watch that movie, it's very naturalistic, quirky, but not, like, exaggeratedly quirky dialogue. And I feel like that's a good match for Tilly. And what I liked about this short was it really felt like it nailed Tilly dialogue and behavior in a way that I think really underlines why people like the character.
See, had I known that this writer was responsible for Rachel Getting Married, I would have been anticipating a dishwasher scene this entire time, Cam.
And they were in the mess hall. It could have happened.
Yeah, I know. Please go watch Rachel Getting Married if you want to know about my dishwasher reference, which it's the most amazing dishwasher scene in cinema history, and I say that in all earnestness.
I remember watching it in theaters, and I was just like, I can't believe I'm seeing this in a movie.
It was like, I was more like, what am I watching?
It was great.
I was like, this family sure loves dishwashers. Anyway.
All families have weird rituals.
We've now confused all of our listeners, but...
I think the crossover for Star Trek shorts and Rachel Getting Married fans is very strong.
Fair enough, fair enough. Yeah, you know, I think any excuse to explore Tilly further is great for us. And, but I walked away from this, just wondering if maybe this did a little bit of damage to Tilly. Mm. And I'm trying to justify some of her actions here, because if you are somebody who's pursuing kind of this command train program, you want to show best judgment at all times possible.
Yeah.
And I really think that throughout this, Tilly showed incredibly bad judgment. She didn't really know anything about Poe.
Right.
She doesn't call security. She doesn't inform her superior officers. She lets this chameleon-like alien roam about the ship.
Yeah.
Even though there's an APB out for her, she doesn't do anything about it. She decides to very inconspicuously transport her off the ship.
Yeah.
Where exactly? I missed out on
deep
that.
Space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poe's floating out there somewhere.
So, yeah, kind of like that was Lore's fate for a couple of years. You know. It bugged me the way that they're portraying her as having such bad judgment. And the only way that I was able to justify it, and it actually makes sense, is that she had that conversation with her mother early on. And I think that sent her into a bit of a downward spiral. And I think you can tell, like, her relationship with her mother is incredibly complicated, and it has the potential to really just, you know, turn her self-esteem into like just a dead grave of emotion.
Oh, wow, this
yes,
is getting dark.
No, I don't know. But you seem a little surprised that I was concerned about maybe the way that they had made her a little bit retrograde in this one.
I don't know that I'd say surprised. I think part of it's just tone. Yeah. This is a very, like, almost comedic short. And so I can kind of forgive a bit
it,
of
it
the...
It was short on comedy.
But I can kind of forgive some of the, I don't know, the lapses in what we would expect from Starfleet Protocol, because it does feel like a fairly, like, tight comedic romp, kind of short.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's trying to be substantial.
Well, the thing is, like, you and I, we've discussed this in our court-martial episode.
Yeah.
The very fact of the matter that, like, Worf can murder people on right. duty, and he's still in Starfleet. I guess Starfleet officers can get away with anything.
And this is a prequel to TNG. It's just chaos
exactly,
at this point.
Exactly. So
I mean, you know, there was that scene with Burnham earlier into Discovery where Burnham tells her
she committed mutiny. Yeah,
not that moment. Where Burnham says, "There's no one path to the captain's chair." Maybe Tilly's path is a lot more chaotic than what we've seen before.
You know, and there, yes, a lot of chicanes that she's going to have to navigate through.
She's going to be one of the bad captains later down the road.
One of the bad apples, yeah. You know, like she's a pressman.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Maybe we can offer some constructive criticism. I came away with this thinking that this, okay, by its nature, a short trek is going to be a much smaller story. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of just following, like, one single character through kind of a day in the life, or, you know, in Tilly's case, it seems as if this was over the course of about 30 minutes.
Right.
I like that idea, but I think that if you are telling a story that I think they clearly wanted to feel as if there was something to take away, like there's, Mary Wiseman has said, like, in an interview, this is supposed to be kind of a morality play.
Okay.
This seems like doesn't really seem like a morality play to me at all.
Right.
So I do wonder about that, but I don't know what this really is there to say. Like, there's an environmental message, I guess. Like, Poe explains that she is twins with her planet, and she needs to respect her planet because of this dilithium mining going on.
Yeah.
It seems very heavy-handed messages being given, and then we find out that she's really about to be coronated as queen of her planet.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like this is an episode from the Saved by the Bell writers, where you don't know that you've been hanging out with royalty this whole time, and at the very end you're like, oh, they're just like you and I. And I just felt like this seemed like an episode that was from a script out of, like, 1990s after-school special television or something like that.
Slight question here. Now, she said her brother was the king.
Yes. So, Cam, first time I watched this one, so I've watched this twice, you've watched this once.
Yes.
I was incredibly confused by that.
I didn't think brother and sister were king and queen.
Well, I was thinking, like, do the Americans not understand how royalty works? Like, just because your brother is king, that doesn't mean that you're queen.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't, and believe me, I'm slow. You'll admit sometimes you can be slow as well.
I think all our listeners would agree.
Exactly. Yes. It was actually, I picked up on it the second time. Her brother has died as well. And so that's why she's very resistant to being coronated.
Right.
They never really explained how her entire family was massacred right after they've made like a cheap warp speed travel.
Yes.
It seems like a horrific events for her species.
Right.
And they never really touch on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. To me, this story, I think character-wise, I'm down for a small story, but the thing is that they're trying to impart onto the viewers that this is a very important kind of message.
It's really heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And it's heavy-handed in a very short amount of time.
And it's right in the title.
Yeah, right in the title. Short track. Yeah. But it's one thing to have these very heavy-handed messages in a Star Trek story that's an hour. Like, you can kind of space it out. You can work in a lot of character, humor, or insight throughout the story. Whereas, like, compressed into 10 minutes, you literally get characters just speaking the themes for, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes straight, credits. And it's like, whoa, okay, that was a little weird.
I don't think we would ever accuse Star Trek of being very subtle.
No.
With its messaging, but, I mean,
and it doesn't even have to be. Sometimes when it's on the nose, it can be absolutely fantastic. It's about how well it conveys what it's trying to say.
And so what I'm wondering then, from your perspective, is the issue just, I guess, the nature of the beast with a short episode, where if you want to get a message in there and you only have 14 minutes to do it, you're just going to have to beat the viewers over the head with what the message is, and that ultimately makes it seem like a very simple, sort of obvious story. I don't know.
You know, I have problems. I don't know about you, but I'm not a big short film type guy. I've always found trouble connecting to them because so much happens in like 8 minutes or something, 10 minutes, and characters behave in ways that you would have to earn in a movie.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, they just jump right to the point in shorts, and it often feels phony to me. And that is really the case here, where we meet this Poe character.
And you prefer to jump right to the point in pants?
What? In pants?
He said in shorts.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. Sorry, listeners.
Let me just pull out the jump to conclusions, Matt, with that joke.
Anyways.
That's an Office Space reference for everyone who didn't know. But
Miss Stiepler.
But you have this character of Poe who's introduced in an interesting way. Like, we've complained about the lack of aliens on Discovery encounters with basically beings outside of the main plot of the show. And I was excited when I realized we were going to meet a new alien, because we're going to talk about the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 trailer in a little bit. But when I look at that trailer, I don't exactly go, yeah, this looks like I'm going to visit all sorts of different worlds and ideas and all that sort of thing. Like Star Trek has kind of trained us to expect from the series.
You might visit the afterworld based on this trailer. we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. But if these shorts were maybe their way to kind of introduce new alien species, that's an interesting idea to me. And when I saw this one pop up, I thought, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We're seeing a different Alpha Quadrant alien. And I like the design of this character of Poe. But Poe shows up, causes a little bit of ruckus in the mess hall, and then cuts to just like having this long monologue describing her entire situation to Tilly without that sort of relationship building that I think the best Star Trek stories depend on, where it's about, you know, both sides learning to understand each other. It's not this like rapid fire, like, oh my God, who are you? Now let me just tell you all my problems and what's going to happen to my planet, and I am the, you know, sister of my planet. And all. It's like, okay, this just feels a little clunky.
And well, speaking of which, I was kind of thrown off by the fact that she's introduced as kind of, I don't know, this beast woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got spikes shooting out of her back. She's growling.
You thought it was a Venom spinoff.
Yeah, no kidding, you know. And then all of a sudden she's in Tilly's quarters and they're just conversing as if, you know, it's just everyday people. I'm just like, well, what happened to Beast Girl?
Yeah,
it was like this huge leap that she just goes from acting one way into an entirely different way. And there just wasn't this continuity there with her character. But
that's also the problem with shorts, is that you have to get to the point.
Yeah.
And so
if she's just walking around growling the whole time, it's going to get a little old. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And so it's tough. Like, I want to give them points for ambition in that they didn't just phone in, like, a really generic story. My comment to you before we watched this first short, and when these were first announced, was like, I hope they're not like the Marvel one-shots that are on all the Blu-rays, where you watch them and you're like, yep, this feels phoned in. There's a couple good ones. Some of the ones Taika Waititi did for the, you know, that were tied to Thor were really funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, they were kind of forgettable and kind of bland and generic.
Peggy Carter have a good one?
I think she did, yeah. Okay, but the fact that I don't really remember shows that it wasn't that memorable.
Yeah.
There was a decent one with Ben Kingsley. But especially the early ones, they were so clunky. And I remember just thinking like, oh, these are not at all living up to what sort of the hype was when they announced that they were going to do these, that these were going to be really fun looks inside their universe. And they felt like they'd been kind of assembled over a weekend really cheaply.
Yeah.
And I like that this Discovery one didn't feel like that. It did feel like it could have come from the actual show.
I think our issues are with the script.
Yeah.
It's actually the execution of the performances, the production design. We're both 90s children.
Sure. And cowabunga.
When we think of webisodes, I think we have a very different image in our brain than like what they realistically have to produce nowadays.
Do they even use the word webisode still?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a child of the 90s.
We were watching webisodes on AOL.
Yeah. So, I mean, production-wise, I was legit impressed. Like,
I had a question.
CBS was like putting budget into this.
Yes, definitely. I was curious though, that opening shot of like the Discovery, was that taken from an episode?
No, it wasn't.
No, it was original, huh?
And that shot of them, like the little worker bee floating over the shuttle bay.
That might have been my favorite part in the whole short.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh, cool. The cargo bay looks really cool.
So I was confused because they called it the cargo bay.
Yeah.
But it was clearly the shuttle bay when they went to it in the pan into the ship. So
right.
I don't know. Continuity.
Cargo / shuttle bay.
Sure. You know, it makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of space in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very spacious.
So, well, they are in outer space. So, I would hope so. Let me ask you this. Do you think, with regards to the intention of these short treks, do you think they're setting things up for maybe some callbacks in season two? Do you think we might see Poe again in season two?
I kind of hope so.
I hope so, because then it would maybe justify this one a little bit more and we can appreciate it a little bit more as well. So, you know, I also wonder, going forward with the subsequent short treks, what do you hope that they amount to with regards to the overall, I guess, story they're trying to tell in Star Trek Discovery? Like, do you think that they should be eventually kind of tied into the series somehow? Or are these just like little one-off episodic adventures that we're not really supposed to think about in the overall mythology that they're building in Star Trek Discovery?
I don't care if they tie into the overall arc of the season or what have you. I'm okay with what the general idea of this short is. Like, you know, the glimpses into Tilly's, you know, her relationship with her mother, stuff like that is valuable and maybe would be on the cutting room floor of a normal episode. Like, I'm okay if they want to use these 10-minute increments to just kind of flesh out
15-minute
character backgrounds and their relationships. That's okay with me, because honestly, when I was watching it, Tilly's a fan favorite character and she gets a ton of screen time, so it's not really relevant necessarily to her what I'm about to say, but it's the sort of thing I wish they maybe had when Voyager was around. Like, imagine if you had a little more with, like, Tuvok or Harry Kim or some of these characters who are, like,
Samantha Wildman
especially, who were, like, invisible on the show a lot of the time. And just think of what these shorts maybe could have contributed just to giving you maybe a firmer grasp on their personal life.
There would have been a lot of clarinet jam sessions.
But maybe there would be an episode that would, like, follow Harry Kim on a date or something with, like, another crew member. And you'd be like, oh, cool. Like, they would never put that into a show, but it would give you just that little bit of detail about what his inner life is outside of just standing behind a console. Yeah. Like, I like the idea of using these for that purpose because, again, I don't think they would necessarily work in a few minutes of Tilly talking to her mother on the phone or through hologram the general show.
You know, I think they would, though.
It depends. If it's like a 37-minute episode like that Vaulting Ambition, maybe not.
No, but I think if it was a 37-minute episode like Vaulting Ambition, they're like, okay, well, let's fill it up a little bit. But
anything we can.
Well, I wonder if the reason why that episode was so short is because they were so focused on story, story, story. And
yeah,
I think that's been our criticism of the show. It's like it's best when it's giving us these character moments like we experienced with Tilly and her mother.
Yeah.
And it is at its weakest when it is just so story heavy that we don't even really get invested with what's going on. It's just we jump from story beat to story beat, and we just kind of shrug our shoulders and we're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I guess all of a sudden Stamets has a big, huge smile on his face because mushrooms are blooming on a planet, and right. he's forgotten about the horrific death of his partner. I'm like, okay. Anyway, but the reason I pose that question to you, though, is because I believe the next short is Calypso. Mm-hmm. That is the one focused on a character we've never even met before.
Right.
So why is that? You know, I believe the hook here is some gentleman wakes up in a sick bay on a ship that seems to be abandoned. I'm assuming eventually it has to tie into what is maybe going on in season two. And right. we're going to get a Saru episode as well. You know, these short treks are going to end with Harry Mudd, right. who I believe is going to be in season two as well. So I think they eventually want to tie in everything to season two. Maybe these are little prequels or
maybe they're like post-credit stingers in like a Marvel movie where they're giving you information that gets the fans all excited, but they aren't crucial. Like, you could skip them and the next movie will explain everything you need to know anyway.
Is this a good way to get fans excited based on this adventure that we experienced now?
You know, it's interesting because
I love the character stuff.
Yeah.
It's the story stuff that I'm a little more...
Can we just say it? It's pretty flat stuff.
Yeah. I'll say this. I watched this the night it aired.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed. Like, I was legit disappointed in it.
I mean, it's tough to get me really involved in like a 15-minute like teenage rebellion story.
Sure. But you know what? I think, let's think about what JJ did in the first 7-8 minutes of the 2009 film.
Yeah.
You can make an incredible short story, so to speak.
So what you're saying is we need to get JJ Abrams to direct short treks?
Yes, exactly. it's next up on his list. Okay. But I'm saying,
would he be insulted if they contacted him?
But look, he and Kurtzman go all the way back to Alias. I'm sure, right. you know, they can figure it out.
Sure.
I don't know.
I think Roberto Orsi might direct one.
Yep. It would be his directing debut at that point. I think the format of this isn't fundamentally flawed. I just think that maybe they didn't seize on the right kind of story to tell. I'll say this. This is what I found kind of a bummer. We live in a very tumultuous period in history right now. I think we see across the developed world that nationalism seems to be on the rise. You know, there are very polarized political systems going on throughout, you know, different progressive countries. Mm-hmm. And they decided to make a story about how a girl who's going to be coronated queen just doesn't want to do it, and it's kind of like, it feels like this real limp sort of like Disney knockoff.
I was gonna say it felt like a Disney princess type moment,
and I was just
when
like,
that all kind of culminated in that reveal, I was like, ooh,
Star
okay.
Trek should kind of transcend that. It should be something more important, and this did not. It seemed as if when they were talking about the like my planet is my twin sort of stuff, I think they were just scrambling to like find some sort of theme to make this a worthwhile sort of story to tell, and I just thought it's kind of a rather weak theme and message. Like, I think there's better environmental stories to do. We saw that with, you know, The Voyage Home, for example.
Sure.
So, yeah, guys, you just need to do a Voyage Home episode, and then, you know. So, yeah.
What did you think of the actual alien character of Poe? Like, did you find her compelling in a compressed amount of time?
I think if we encounter her again in season two proper, mm-hmm. I think my feelings might change in that I'm like, okay, they've set her up. How is she dealing with a lot of the pressures of being queen of a newly warp-capable planet? I think that's interesting in that, like, we could just randomly meet this character in season two, and we're like, okay. But we have the kind of the background and how she is like with Tilly, and I think that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Was I gripped by Poe out of the gate? No.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't see that this is like a character that will never be interesting to me. Like,
right,
not at
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
Like, I see potential behind her.
Yeah, like, I thought the actress, Yadira Guevara Prip, like, I think she brought personality to the character, and I mean, I give her a certain amount of props in making her feel like a unique alien character in only a few minutes, because How many Star Trek episodes have we seen over the years that feature some alien species that you can't remember a single one of once the episode's over?
Well, mostly because they don't even have, like, bumps on their forehead. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, the entire cast of Meridian.
or even the Ito.
Right, yeah.
Although the Ito had, like, pretty awesome outfits.
Yeah, actually, I think they're very memorable.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
if you give me an Ito short, I would totally watch it.
I would prefer to wear Ito pants, but if you want to wear Ito shorts,
would it be Ito short shorts?
Yes, yes, yeah. Wait a minute, you are wearing those right now, Cam. Oh dear,
let's go jogging. But like, I think this character has personality, and I liked her chemistry with Tilly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just don't know what they do with this character. Like, that's the thing. I can't wrap my head around what this character could contribute further down the road, because it feels like the type of story and drama that is created to fill a very short amount of time.
Yes.
It does not feel layered or deep or offering a lot of, like, dangling threads that you're like, boy, I can't wait to see that delved into more.
Like, my best guess is they need dilithium at some point in season two, and they end up on this planet. And we've got a little background on this character who's obviously maybe conflicted about her dilithium deposits.
Now, is it a case where Tilly encounters this character again, but everything they say is very generic and does not tie specifically to the events of this short, because so many people probably haven't seen this short?
Yes, 100%. 100%. Or the best we can hope for is, like, Tilly just looks away from the view screen and is just like, I don't know anything about this, just try to ignore, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. It was very interesting to me in that, this aired a few days ago from when we're recording, and I was very aware of the night it played, and I just didn't really see too many people talking about it.
Yeah, you know, I was curious because I was like, I made sure that I watched it. For me, it was an incredibly long day for me on Thursday.
Yeah.
I got home very late, and I still watched it regardless, just because I
It wasn't a big time investment, to be fair.
That's why I was able to justify watching it. Yeah. And but I did not want to be, like, swept up with all this social media all going on all around me and, like,
you had nothing to worry about.
Well, exactly. I was kind of surprised that people just weren't nearly as talkative about it as maybe I expected. I mean, my anticipation level was relatively big. I was like, I'm very curious about where Discovery goes next. Do you think this gives us any hints about where Discovery is going next? Can I ask you this, Cam, with regards to the timeline? So we do know that Tilly is an ensign now, as of Runaway.
Yeah.
But it's very, like, they're not, going in tandem with the Enterprise, the 1701, right now. So we know that it must take place after the adventures with the 1701.
Yeah.
So I am very just curious about when this exactly takes place. And does that then remove a lot of tension, knowing that, Tilly's going to make it out of all these adventures just okay for the next little while?
I mean, I never really thought Tilly wasn't going to make it out okay. I feel like if there's one character that's safe, it's her, to a certain degree.
Yes, yes.
So, no, that doesn't really remove any tension for me. I'm okay with it completely.
Okay.
It also is very good about tiptoeing around anything that could be construed as plot spoilers for where Tilly's journey's taking her.
And, I think that's the genius of not even having, like, a little cameo appearance of one of the characters. We saw Burnham in a photo with Tilly in the background.
Yeah.
That was about it. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I was
hoping they'd throw in, like, a Milton Richter or something. Like, just walking into, because there's a scene where a bunch of the characters walk into the mess hall. And I thought it'd be fun. It was just, like, one of the kind of the B players.
Well, they had one of the very recognizable aliens in the background there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm blanking on the name of the species or the name of the character.
The one that looks like kind of like a puffed up jellyfish.
Sort of, yeah. I remember when we were in the...
Not jellyfish. What are the... Blowfish.
Blowfish, yeah. We were in the Las Vegas convention, and they're actually... Neville Page was there discussing kind of the makeup, and they actually went into this particular alien because it's very iconic, very... Well, I don't know about iconic, but like...
you're dressed as one right now.
I'm getting ready for Halloween early this year. But it was very distinct looking. And so my eyes did, widen when I saw him walk into, the mess hall. But I was okay not having any cameos with this. So going forward, Cam, what do you want? I'm actually far more interested in what they're going to do with the next one. I believe Calypso is next. It's not the Saru episode. I could be mistaken, but I'm more interested in what they do with a character we've never met before, put in a interesting kind of a situation where he wakes up, doesn't know where he is, and it's an abandoned ship. That's a good kind of jumping off point for a short story that we're going to see.
Yeah, I think that one offers a level of mystery that just this one doesn't. there's really no mystery going on here.
No, the mystery is, where did they transport Po to?
Yeah, well, that's true.
Maybe I need to watch it a third time. Maybe I'm missing out on something very obvious, yeah, but, yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like she's, like, in the middle of a meteor, like, stuck in between a couple rocks or something, like, gasping for oxygen.
She'll be picked up by the next ship that goes by.
Okay, I hope so.
No, that's an excellent question. But I think that one offers kind of an interesting hook of, like, this character we don't know waking up in sickbay. And maybe that's the issue with at least this one, is that if it's a short, it has to grab you immediately. You have no time to get into it. And look, they have a bit of an advantage in the fact that, like, Tilly's a character we love, so we're on board.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no real tight hook to this story. And maybe that's the problem, is that if there are going to be these short little bursts of Star Trekkiness, Star Trek really depends on how good the hook is in any given episode.
Yeah.
And, like, what is really the hook of this story?
There's a stowaway.
Uh-huh. I think that was pretty much the summary of what the thing was, yeah.
And Tilly has to figure out what to do. It's not a super compelling hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this makes me wonder if maybe the Saru episode maybe will suffer from kind of the same things that we're complaining about here. I think the Calypso one will actually be good.
I actually have high hopes for the Harry Mudd one as well, because I think the Harry Mudd short really offers a lot of opportunity to just do whatever you want and to go off the beaten track. Whereas, like, a Saru one, I mean, they're kind of limited in where they can take that because of where it fits in terms of where the series is going.
Like, I don't think it's going to be Saru on the bridge.
Yeah.
So it's going to be him in very much kind of similar circumstances as Tilly, where, mm-hmm. you know, we see him in his quarters and then he's walking down the halls or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel it's very limited, whereas the Harry Mudd one, you can do pretty much anything you want.
Yeah.
We already agree that we like the hook behind the Calypso one.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm a little bit wary of what they do with Saru, but I'm very much, you know, looking forward to... Look, give... You know, Harry Mudd, a pirate adventure. The only thing that I will warn against is, like, if they try to jam him too much with Harry Mudd.
Sure.
I think it would work better if, like, he's in a cockpit of a ship trying to escape something. It's very much like a kind of, you know, closed off sort of circumstances, as opposed to him jumping to, like, 12 different locations in, like, 14 minutes.
And, like, use these shorts to, like, highlight a personality trait of your character. So, like, Harry Mudd.
Shorts?
Harry Mudd.
Denim cutoffs? Is that what you're talking about?
Never nudes? you know, Harry Mudd is, like, ingenious when he's going to be pinned down. Like, he can escape from anything. So I think it would be really interesting to have the story be how he has to stage an escape. And that, you know, really underlines that trait about him. And I think that's the sort of thing that they should do. And the Tilly one does that a little bit, where it shows her working out her sort of demons with her mother's relationship with this young girl.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it was done in an interesting way, or a way that felt like... I just don't understand what excited them about this. Because these short treks are a new idea for this franchise. They've never been done before. And I would hope that when they came up with the idea, they're like, oh my god, we've got some genius ideas for these. Like, these are really, I think, going to be great. Like, I watched this one and I'm like, what inspired this? Because this did cost money. This was not something that was, like, cranked out on no budget whatsoever.
What
fired their interest in doing this?
I think it's CBS saying, hey guys, let's get some of these short webisodes. I know I'm still calling it a webisode, but let's get these things out there in the months leading up to season two.
Yeah.
It's also going to get people continuing their subscription to CBS All Access for the next little while.
But is it really feeding the discussion?
No. I don't think so.
I
think this is more of an economic sort of thing on CBS All Access's part.
Right.
Yeah.
But I looked at, like, IMDb, you know, the runaway rating is like 6.9.
Yeah.
So, like, the fans on IMDb who watched this were like, eh.
Yeah.
Which doesn't bode well. Because
I had about 10,000 accounts and I kept pushing like 2 stars on all of my different accounts. So, you know, my fault, guys.
No, we each had accounts. I was hitting 10 and you were hitting 1. Yeah.
Why don't we segue on to more Discovery news. We had New York Comic Con just this past weekend, and we had another Discovery Season 2 trailer. Sadly, no Lenny Kravitz.
No, I was hoping for American Woman.
I know. Get away from me, Cam.
But weirdly enough, the American Woman montage in my head would be Saru footage.
Yeah.
So it would be extra confusing.
And it's just him eating blueberries, though. It, very suggestively.
In slow-mo.
Yeah. So, just think about that, listeners.
Now, that's a short trek.
Yeah. So, I feel a little conflicted on this one in that, like, the imagery that we're getting, this seems super exciting. I'm far more interested in this than the boring Klingon war that we saw in season one.
There was some really cinematic-looking shots in this trailer.
You and I, we've kind of, like, complained about the quality of the VFX on Discovery in season one. The VFX here actually look a step up than what we saw. And, but here's the thing, I've seen interviews with Sonequa Martin-Green as well, and she was talking about how the theme of season two is really going to be talking about kind of like science versus faith. And we have Saru talking about how he has the hope that there is some, you know, entity out there watching over us all. This is the science, by trade, he's a science officer.
Right.
And we have, I know all the fans like to talk about the Roddenberry vision, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to get into that debate because who can really decipher what the Roddenberry vision is? I mean, it's whatever you want to make it out to be. But I do know for a fact that Roddenberry...
It's dependent on the era, too.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like, 60s Roddenberry, very different than what we saw in the 70s and the 80s.
The motion picture versus first season of TNG. Yeah.
But the thing that has been a constant through line for him, though, is that he is a humanist in that he believes that the great accomplishments of man are because of man's own ingenuity, not because of any supernatural entities out there.
Right.
And so I wonder what they're trying to say with this if we come down... And look, season two hasn't started. Who knows? But I just hope that the debate isn't, you know, who knows whether there's a higher power looking over us after all. I think what they did on Deep Space Nine, where they established that, you know, and throughout the original series, where like aliens to one species are gods to another species. I think that's a far more interesting kind of conversation to have with regards to religion.
And you mentioned the Roddenberry vision. That's actually a big part of the Roddenberry vision, because he would explore that theme over and over. Like, he was obsessed with that, even in the motion picture, of course.
Yeah, and so this is kind of the thing. Like, I just have my antennae sticking up right now. Mm-hmm. Look, just based on the SMG interview, based on Saru's line in here, I don't think Star Trek is about... You know, the fact that we can never know if God exists. I think the Final Frontier established that once and for all. You know, so to me, that's kind of getting away from what Star Trek does best.
Yeah.
And so I hope they, I don't know, I hope they execute this idea in a way that's interesting. But Cam, what was your initial takeaway from the season two second trailer that we got here?
Pike is killing it.
Okay.
I'm loving Pike so far.
Yeah.
Anson Mount, who was an actor who was an unknown quantity to me. I mean,
except for Crossroads, starring Britney Spears.
Well, of course. Yeah. That's my Halloween costume this year. But
Britney Spears. You've got like
a python.
A python like wrapped around your neck right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's unrelated to the costume though.
It's true, people. You're not here with me. It's scary.
But yeah, like, he has so much authority over the screen when I see this Pike on these trailers that I am so excited for Pike, and that's not something I ever would have said when he was cast.
Yeah.
But, you know, my biggest takeaway, and this is just because I'm such an original series fan, I was really excited to see Rebecca Romijn as number one.
Yeah, we were in our WhatsApp group, and I was, showing photos of her, like, stills that CBS has released. I was just like, she's really kind of... she's kind of captured that Majel Barrett essence that we got in the pilot.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm digging what she's doing right now. I'm very excited to see what else she brings. I think so far it's great casting with Anson Mount. And we also have Ethan Peck as Spock. We got our first look at a bearded Spock. I'm intrigued by what they do with Spock. Like, I'm genuinely excited to see it. I'm not going to be one of those fans who are like, you ruined Spock. Unless they do something, like, absolutely outrageous.
Right.
This is a character who, it's 10 years before we ever met him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm genuinely interested in kind of the the Spock who smiles when he's on a planet
sure.
with one Captain Pike, as we saw in the first episode.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And so, I'm up for whatever adventure that we get with these new people here.
I thought it was odd, though, when Ethan Peck was cast and they had photos of him online, I was actually like, wow, that guy does look like Spock. Like, he's really strong casting. It's kind of like, you know, whenever they announced, like, a Superman casting, you'd look at Brandon Routh or Henry Cavill, and you're like, yep, they look like Superman. That's how I felt when they cast Ethan Peck. Mm-hmm. I thought he looked less like Spock in the actual footage from the show.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
And I'm not even talking about the beard. I just mean, like, when I saw him, I'm like, that's not what he...
He seemed a little bit more, like, diminutive than, like, Nimoy.
Yeah, yeah.
In an interesting way. As well, from like Zach Quinto seemed to really capture kind of the Nimoy essence,
definitely,
you know, as well. And the other thing that I should bring up, you know, I alluded to it earlier on in this episode, but a lot of this has to do with like red angels appearing in people's visions,
right?
That's the other thing that's making me a little bit wary of this science versus faith theme that we're going to be exploring, because we do know for a fact these aren't actual angels; they just like are beings that look like angels. But the fact that we have our main characters talking about angels, it kind of makes me feel like...
I was flashing back to Star Wars Episode 1 with the, are you an angel?
That's going to be Saru's line.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
And then it's going to start blasting American Woman in the background.
No, it cuts to Saru being like, now this is pod racing.
What pod racer would Saru be if...
Oh.
Or would he be the Greg Proops color commentator?
Boy, Saru, he's kind of an Odie Mandrell, I think.
Okay.
We're getting really down the rabbit hole here.
Look, but here, okay, my take, okay, let's talk about some of the cool highlights here. We were told at the convention by Neville Page that the Klingons were going to have a new look this year.
Yes.
And we're seeing it, and they've got hair and they've got beards, very much like the Klingons we all know from, you know, the 80s onwards. So... I think this is kind of the best of both worlds here, where like you can, where you can kind of justify like, oh, maybe they were shaving their heads this whole time in season one. Mary Chifo came out during New York Comic Con and said, at times of war, Klingons shave their heads. I'm like, okay, never heard that one before, but let's go with it. You know, it makes sense because look,
did Worf know this during the Dominion War?
Yeah, exactly. Look, you know, societies change over 100 years. So
Do they? Sometimes they go back and forth on that
that's
one.
That's true. So, I'll go with this.
And the Klingon, like, they showed, the older one with the white hair, I thought looked great.
He looks like a Klingon.
And it really makes you realize how big a difference, like, a shaved head versus not a shaved head is. Because when those Klingons showed up in season one of Discovery, they looked not very Klingon.
No.
But you throw, like, hair and a beard on them and suddenly they look pretty Klingonish.
It's going to be really weird when we see the new versions of the Ferengi on Discovery and they all have beards and hair on top of their heads. And we're going to like, huh? What?
I did not like Laurel with hair, though.
I did not either. It's like, that doesn't look like the Laurel I know.
No, not at all.
It like, the wig looks really bad.
Yes.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it looks like a really cheap wig.
Yeah.
And to me... I think Klingon females have a very distinct look over the course of what we've seen in previous series.
Yeah, it's called a bad perm.
Sure. But, like, I looked at that haircut, and I was just like, it doesn't even look like it's trying to evoke that sort of thing. Yeah. It just looks like a bad, almost like 80s wig.
I was thinking, like, it reminded me of, like, the haircut that the title character of Rebecca had in the film Rebecca.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I was just like, this seems, like, not Klingon. It seems like very 1950s kind of...
Right.
Hairdo.
Rebecca was 40s, but yeah.
Well, I was talking about the 50s, okay? So there you go. So I don't know. But the other Klingon news, though, is that we did see this certain image of the classic, you know, D7 Klingon battlecruiser.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been a fan of the Klingon ships that we've seen so far in Discovery.
Have you been a fan of any of the ships, really?
No. The one that I probably like the most is the Shenzhou.
Yeah.
And, well, that one's floating off in outer space somewhere.
Right, yeah.
I genuinely do not like the ship design of Discovery. Yeah. It just doesn't... There's such a classic look of this era associated with the original series, and I think there's a total easy way to hip it up, you know, for this current generation. And they just showed it to us in the season finale with the 1701. I was why not just give it back to this kind of classic look, but they want to do this super, it seems like super early 2000s sort of styling where, like, I know, let's streamline everything, guys.
Right, yeah.
And I'm just like, okay.
That's kind of why I liked the sarcophagus ship, though. It was so weird.
Yeah.
That I was like, that's interesting. I've never seen this in Star Trek before, and it sticks in my head.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Charon, Emperor Georgiou's ship, is completely forgettable to me. I couldn't even tell you what it looks like.
It looks like a big cruise ship.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and it's, I didn't like that design.
Yeah.
But look, if you can take a look at the classic designs that we saw in the original series, and then just give it a different little spin, like, hip it up to a certain degree, I'm totally down. So the D7 looks really cool, just based on what we saw in the trailer. I'm looking forward to whatever ideas they have behind that. And I hope, you know, we get some more classic-looking Starship designs going as we get closer and closer to the Kirk and Spock era. But
yeah.
I'm not hopeful that's going to be the case. I'm very skeptical.
Would you say we got a lot of classic ship designs in Enterprise?
Well, we only got the NX-01 and the Columbia,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they weren't bad. They were memorable.
But, you know, I would say the alien ships are actually pretty cool looking. I'm a bigger fan of the Vulcan ones than you are.
Mm-hmm.
The Andorian ones are okay as well. And they're actually doing some interesting stuff with the Klingons as well, like making them kind of proto, Klingon,
yeah,
classic Klingon ships.
Just in terms of the timeline, it does feel weird to go from fairly memorable ships in Enterprise to kind of these really forgettable batch in Discovery, and then going into the iconic ones of the original series.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like they're bridging the gap there very well visually.
It just seems as if... So John Eaves, he was at the convention as well, and he was explaining kind of what the design thing was, and I think he had a lot of oversight in that, like, people were overseeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And what he explained, though, is that he just kept doing ship design after ship design, and they kept saying, like, okay, well, we don't want that for the Shenzhou, but we'll make that part of the fleet for the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Sure.
And so all the ships that we, like, I'd say like 75% of the ship designs that we saw at Binary Stars, they're all kind of like different sort of takes on what the Shenzhou ended up looking like.
Right.
I think that's part of the problem where they all kind of blend together in design and they don't seem super, super distinct from one another. And I think that was part of the problem is that they came out with so many different ship designs for this big, huge fleet that nothing is sticking out as super memorable. And
right.
I think that's kind of a big problem. So I hope that ship design work for at least Starfleet is going to be taken up a notch in season two as well.
When you watch the trailer for this season two, do you get the sense that they were picking up on any of the problems that season one might have had?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I also heard, I forget who to attribute it to, but coming out of New York Comic Con, they're saying that season two is going to be a little bit more episodic.
Yes.
Which I think is something that you and I were both pushing for as well.
Wait, I'm not going to get like 12 or 13 episodes on Red Angels?
No, they're all going to be like short treks, you know? So I think maybe they recognize that. The fact that they want to have a bit of a science mystery going on versus a war, you know, like we've discussed it before, but the reason why the Dominion War worked is because there was like 5 seasons of buildup.
Yeah.
Whereas this, like, what are we invested in really with this Klingon war in season one that you and I both were kind of underwhelmed by?
Right.
So I think they are picking up on this stuff. Let's look at the casting. I think this is the strength of Discovery right now. It's like, this is a very well-cast show.
Yeah.
Like, props to the casting director here.
I would honestly say, like, the Captain Picard spinoff has an uphill battle following Discovery just in terms of how well it cast its ensemble. And I hope Picard can match that.
Well, my guess, though, is that they're going to keep a lot of the same creative team, get a lot of the continuity going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we can hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall, looking forward to season two. We do know from Comic-Con that it will be premiering January 17th, and it'll be no mid-season break like we had last year.
Right.
So it'll be going all the way straight through, I believe, April 11th, if I'm doing the math right. You and I were going to be doing weekly reviews. Keep in mind, listeners, these episodes will be premiering on Thursdays.
Yeah.
Which is not the greatest day for either you or I, or for just podcasts. Most people don't listen to podcasts on like Friday nights or Saturday nights.
Well, not most people.
Not most people, yeah. So I mean, I do.
And I listen to my own.
Yeah. On a loop.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, we will still be covering this. I think we're just aiming to get them out by Sunday evenings.
Right.
So, yeah. Watch it over the weekend. We'll have our thoughts on Sunday evenings. And I'm looking forward to season two. I think Runaway, we were left a little underwhelmed. But look, it's a short episode. I'm okay with what we're getting here.
I'm really curious whether these continue.
Like in future seasons?
Yeah. Like, are these short treks here to stay? Are they going to be just an experiment that they're just trying out? Like, part of me wonders, once they get shows like Captain Picard and maybe the Starfleet Academy spinoff going, are they that interested in throwing extra Star Trek content out? Or are they so focused on, well, they've already got all these other shows to fill the time?
Yeah, well, I think let's go back to one of the CBS executives' statements from earlier on this year, where they said, like, we want to have some sort of Star Trek, you know, content going on year-round. And
right.
I think this is part of this overall strategy. So if you get to the point where you've got Discovery plus a Picard spinoff plus, I don't know, the supposed Star Trek Academy show.
I would love them to just do a two-hour movie. Like a Star Trek film of some sort.
Sure. I wonder if there... I believe there are literal legal issues that. I think that's what has stymied one Nick Meyer's efforts to get this con spinoff going on.
Right.
In that he has said that it was originally supposed to be a trilogy of films.
Mm-hmm.
And Paramount, I guess, interceded in that.
Right.
So anyway... But
I would love to see that. Like, if they could ever make that happen,
sure.
I think that'd be cool to have 2-hour streaming Star Trek movies that you could make that would serve the fans in a way the big screen ones never will.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think that would be really a really fun opportunity.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I think once they get like year-round content going for Star Trek, then these short treks will probably go the way of the dodo board, the dodo bird,
right?
As I meant to say. So yeah.
Okay, before we sign off, I want just to give a special thanks to David E. Hughes, who, following our top Voyager episodes list, sent us in what is going to help me so much in the future, Tyler, a breakdown of all the Voyager episodes by which character they're focused on.
Right.
We didn't thank you last week, David. We're very sorry. The episode we did on the DS9 wrap-up went really long,
right?
But this was great, and I was so happy to have a breakdown of Voyager episodes.
I was genuinely impressed by this.
Yeah, I appreciate the work so much, because there are so many times where we're trying to do research for podcasts, and certain series more so than others, I find hard to remember specifically what the episode is about. Just from the titles, like the titles don't stick in my head as well for Voyager and Enterprise for that matter.
And it's so weird, like you have, like I'm asking you just now and you have no idea what I'm talking about when I say the word Runaway.
What?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
The Linkin Park song?
Sure.
Yeah, but thank you so much for that, David. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Let us know what you think of Runaway. Hopefully we can get a little more discussion there than I've seen anywhere else on the internet. Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Some more Picard news coming out of New York Comic Con, and I think we are going to use that as a jumping off point to kind of delve into what the Alpha Quadrant looks like as of Picard's era, because the little hints that we've gotten so far, the Alpha Quadrant is completely different than where we left it off in, you know, the 1990s. And
right.
It's going to be interesting to see how the new writers really navigate this universe that has changed so much since the height of the Next Gen era. So if you want our perspectives on where we left off with big species like the Klingons, the Romulans, and where we go next and how they're going to be involved with the Picard spinoff, have at it. We're going to be doing a fun episode next week.
Awesome. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V is in Voyage Home is apparently the ultimate short trek, according to Tyler Smith. Yes.
Thank you, Cam. You can find me at Reportin. That's R is in Runaway, Eporton.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed. I wanna shut the door.
Transfer complete.